Then the ark started moving, and it drifted with the tide.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christine O'Loury, covering an update on the construction of a new Mohawk Language and Cultural Center in Tiahdanega.
Hello, I'm Christine O'Loury, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
As construction continues on the new Kintege Language and Cultural Center in Tiahdanega, it has been announced that the center has received a $486,600 GROW grant provided by the provincial government's Ontario Trillium Foundation to be used for the restoration of nature surrounding the center. TTO is an organization that has developed and delivered Mohawk language programs for two decades. TTO is currently in the process of building their new language and cultural center to house and expand their programming, set to open by fall 2025. Over the next 3 years, the GROW grant will be used for the restoration and conservation of 2 acres of forests, wetlands, and meadows surrounding the site. TTO has partnered with Wintergreen Studios for the project, an environmental center located in South Frontenac that works to preserve natural ecosystems and assists other organizations with conservation and sustainability projects. Dr. Rena Upitis, founding director of Wintergreen Studios, shared how the collaboration between TTO and Wintergreen Studios began and led to the project being funded by the GROW grant.
So our association with TTO started several years ago when the school at Tiahdanega brought some of their students to Wintergreen for a spring Land Art BioBlitz event. And they've been coming ever since, and I've come to know Callie Hill, who's the Chief Executive Officer at TTO, quite well. And this fall, we decided that the two of us would sit down and write a grant proposal to the Ontario Trillium Foundation. We were absolutely delighted that the Ontario government was funding something that had to do with land restoration, and thrilled to have a formal way of deepening our partnership with TTO.
Ubitus notes that restoration will be a major undertaking given the current state of the land.
The state of the land now is, I would say, damaged by human use and even abuse over the last long while. Before the building began, it was the Shannonville Fairgrounds, and having a fairground and a fairground with animals is not great for natural landscapes. So the way that the land is right now is it's a giant construction site with lots of sand and gravel and quite a few noxious invasive species that tend to pop up on in construction sites. So there's poison parsnips, there are thistles, buckthorn, things that are not conducive to a really diverse and beautiful learning environment. So the land right now, it's not pretty. But once upon a time, it was a place that housed, for example, a lot of milkweed. It was the home to probably most of the monarch butterfly species in the area. So one of the things that we're doing is looking to what used to be there and conserving and regenerating that land so that those kinds of species can thrive again.
The Wintergreen team is already at work, breaking ground just after their launch last week, carefully mapping the current landscape and strategically determining how to restore balance.
We have a number of people who are well-versed in plant life, particularly local and native species and near native species. And we have already started to do a very intense inventory of the plants that are there. Our goal is to ensure that there's a invisible boundary between the existing ecology and what we help with in terms of restoration so that the whole thing becomes seamless.
The restoration will be led by indigenous ecological knowledge, emphasizing native plants' traditional uses and learning with the land.
And the emphasis, as I said, is on local plants. We're also going to be helping with traditional gardens, medicine gardens, greenhouse, any way we can really to restore the land to what it would have been had a building not popped up in the middle of it. It's a delicate kind of massaging of what's there and what could be introduced so that over time the land takes care of itself.
TTO and Wintergreen are already considering ways the land can be integrated into learning at the center.
One of the things that we're looking at planting is nut trees, and nut trees that are natural to that area. So that brings into possibility planting, harvesting, preserving, eating all kinds of foods that a food forest can produce. So there's many connections with the work that the center will do with the land itself.
These efforts will take time, far longer than the 3-year grant period. But both organizations are looking forward to the journey ahead.
Well, restoration work takes a long time. We will have, if you'll excuse the pun, the seeds of the project in place at the end of 3 years. But it'll take 20 or 30 years for the landscape to do its own work. And in terms of when we start to see things immediately, we've received the go-ahead. We've had our official launch, and the day of the launch, we had people from Wintergreen out on the land doing surveys and having conversations and discussions about what to plant this summer and what to plant this coming fall.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about findings of the Kingston Police Collision Report for the first quarter of 2025.
Thank you, Jesse. Kingston Police have released their collision report for the first quarter of 2025, covering the period from January 1st to March 31st. The report was compiled by Accident Support Services International Limited. The collision report categorizes incidents into two types: those where police were present at the scene and those that were self-reported. Police were on the scene at 255 collisions in the first quarter of 2025, while 504 collisions were self-reported, for a total of 759, a slight increase over the same period from last year, where 744 collisions were counted. Of the collisions where Kingston police were on the scene, there were no fatalities, but 33 non-fatal injuries occurred. In the first quarter of last year, there were no fatal collisions and 29 non-fatal injuries. Of the collisions police were on the scene for in the first quarter of 2025, 203 were deemed as property damage only, or PDO. PDO collisions are those where no injuries are reported, just damage to vehicles or property. There were 18 collisions where no reportable damage was observed. Last year, during the same period, 218 collisions were PDO and 33 involved no reportable damage. The top intersection for collisions in the city of Kingston is at Bath Road and Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard, with 10 collisions reported in the first quarter of 2025. The intersection of Centennial Drive and Taylor Kidd Boulevard was the scene of 7 collisions, as was the intersection of Gardner's Road and Princess Street. These numbers are up slightly from the first quarter of 2024. Last year, Bath and Sir John A. was the site of 7 collisions, and Centennial and Taylor Kidd and Gardner's and Princess were the location of 6. The full collision report for the first quarter of 2025 can be viewed online through the Kingston Police website. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with a story from the LGAI reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Napanee Council's call for a structural analysis of the Water Street Swing Bridge.
Thank you, Dinah. Gananoque Council has ordered a structural and mechanical analysis of the Water Street Swing Bridge while approving a speed limit reduction on the span and its approaches, dropping from 50 kilometers an hour to 25. The decisions passed during last Tuesday's council meeting come in response to ongoing concerns about the aging bridge's stability, maintenance needs, and public safety. The analysis will focus on the bridge's center pier turning mechanism to determine if any section loss or deterioration could threaten the structure's integrity. Depending on the results, the town may eventually pursue full rehabilitation or replacement. David Armstrong, the town's manager of public works, said the bridge continues to exhibit movement when vehicles pass over, particularly on the east side of the span and when crossing from east to west at higher speeds. Armstrong noted that since he joined the town in 2021, the bridge has never been swung to allow marine traffic through, despite its historical function. Originally built in 1894 as a railway bridge, the structure was converted for road use in 1981 and has been identified by the province as historically significant. The town has approximately $179,000 remaining in its 2025 budget for repairs and maintenance to the bridge, a sum expected to cover the cost of the structural analysis and any immediate maintenance needs identified. The analysis is anticipated to be completed within 4 to 8 weeks.
And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to the LJI reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about Loyalist Township's attempts to secure more housing funding from the Housing Accelerator Fund.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township staff are looking at bringing forth a proposal to permit 4 units as of right in all urban serviced areas. This is an increase from the 3 units as of right currently permitted through Ontario's Bill 23, More Homes Built Faster Act of 2022. Allowing 4 units as of right to support infill development in low-density neighborhoods is a minimum program requirement to apply for the large urban stream of the Housing Accelerator Fund. These actions come as part of the township's council-endorsed action plan for the fund. According to staff, the initiative aims to accelerate the supply of housing by increasing the number of units that can be constructed on a single lot. It also promotes additional infill opportunities within existing established neighborhoods. A statutory public meeting was held last week to obtain public input. Staff noted that all input will be considered as they prepare the final proposal. Development Services Manager Andrea Furness explains how the number of units will work.
These applications are being proposed where there's a principal dwelling on the lot, which could be a single detached dwelling, semi, or a townhome. And it could contain 3 extra units within the main dwelling, or it could be in the form of 2 within the dwelling, and then 1 as a detached unit, like a coach house.
Furness spoke about regulations they'll be looking to impose as well.
We're proposing zoning performance standards to further regulate the additional units, such as requiring an additional parking space for each unit, and provisions to ensure that the units are secondary to the main principal dwelling house. For the detached units, location, height, and setbacks are also being implemented as well.
Furness spoke about lots and dwellings outside the urban area.
In addition to the urban area, we've also included updated official plan policies for 1 additional residential unit outside the urban areas, so our rural areas and our hamlets, we already have some official plan policies to that effect, and then now we're implementing them through zoning as part of this exercise as well.
Furness detailed some of the difficulties they may face.
Some of the proposed regulations that we're proposing will be difficult to meet in some areas of the townships, particularly in more newer, higher dense subdivisions, primarily due to parking constraints. As an example, for a lot in a new urban subdivision to accommodate 4 units, they would require 5 parking spaces, which is not feasible in majority of the newer subdivisions. Setbacks for detached units could also be limited. On some of the smaller residential lots in new subdivision as well. We've received some public comments to that effect. We'll be reviewing them in greater detail in order to make appropriate changes before we bring a recommendation report back to council.
Furnace explained how they'll be looking into parking issues.
Any potential reduced parking requirements requires a much larger review and analysis, which we're doing as part of the overall zoning bylaw review with a traffic and parking consultant. So at this time, we're not proposing any reductions to parking spaces for any second units.
Furnace detailed their next steps.
So overall, this is our first draft. We'll be reviewing all feedback received, including comments we already have, and we'll come back to council with a recommendation.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about Bill Roberts, the first Canadian appointed chair of the Board of Trustees for WPBS-TV.
Bill Roberts is a municipal councillor in Prince Edward County and has recently been appointed the first Canadian to chair the Board of Trustees for the Watertown Public Broadcasting Service. WPBS is a not-for-profit public television station serving eastern Ontario and northern New York State. He has held very senior positions in television, including TV Ontario, Vision TV, CRTC, and many more. Bill talks to us about his background, his new position, and the challenges ahead. Bill Roberts, you're taking on a new position. How does that feel?
Well, it's a big responsibility, but I enjoy a challenge. It seems to be the thing that I do.
And this new position that you're taking, chair of the Board of Trustees for WPBS-TV, how long will you be in the position?
I think there's a two-term limit, so they won't have to put up with me for more than 6 years.
But you've been with them for quite some time in another capacity.
It's 9 years that I've been on the board, that's right.
Wow. How did you get involved with that?
Well, my story about public service broadcasting goes back to when I was 12, I think, when my very first paying gig was as a child person in a CBC radio show. So the public service broadcasting thing is kind of bred in the bone. And when I was managing director of TV Ontario, I think you may remember there was a premier named Mike Harris who was very keen to sell and privatize TV Ontario. So I needed to look around pretty quickly to find other sources of revenue and just more money. Mm-hmm. And to my surprise, there were 14 actually PBS border stations that stepped up and said, you know, Bill, we'd be happy to work with TV Ontario. And, you know, it saved my butt. Also, luckily, Premier Harris did not privatize TV Ontario. And there I was with 14 new partners to work with. So that was something. And then in 1991, I co-created with colleagues in NHK Japan. NHK is actually the largest public broadcaster in the world. Lots of people think it's the BBC, but it's actually NHK in Japan. We created this thing called Public Broadcasters International, which is now about 40 different public broadcasters from around the world. And we hosted TV Ontario, and when I was an executive there, hosted the first PBI, or Public Broadcasters International. And then right after that was PBS. They hosted, and last year that was the CBC that hosted, and it's really grown into something. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, there I was with PBS.
In your new position, what are you hoping to achieve, or what are your goals?
Well, we're up against a mindset. Frankly, it's an ideology which is attacking universities, attacking immigrants, attacking museums, attacking law firms, attacking cultural institutions. And PBS is not spared from that attack by, I think, what's fair to say is an increasingly authoritarian and extreme right-wing agenda in the White House. We're hoping that Congress, at the last minute perhaps, will not claw back what Congress has already passed in terms of funding for PBS. It's weird. Poll after poll after poll done by Democrats, Republicans, Independents, you pick your pollster, come up with PBS being the number one most trusted institution in the United States. And in terms of the American taxpayer, the number two best institution to invest in terms of taxpayer dollars getting benefits to the U.S. military. So, that's sort of what you would think would be the MAGA crowd. And also, we've done some polling more recently within the last year that looks at solid Republican MAGA states. And it would appear from the polling data that at least 65% of Republicans in those states would like to see PBS not only continue to be funded, especially with funds that have already been voted two and three years ago, but also increased funding. So hopefully we'll be able to turn that around. But I have some contingencies if we don't. There has not been one Republican administration in the history of the United States that has not gone after zeroing out public broadcasting.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I think people should support public broadcasters. They should support community broadcasters. I think that community broadcasters like 99.3 County FM here in Prince Edward County, student radio is very important. I was involved in student radio when I was at Trent University. It was kind of cut my teeth on that sort of approach to an independent, open mind media. And wherever you are, support your educational broadcaster, Knowledge Network, TV Ontario, TV Quebec, and of course the CBC, Radio-Canada.
Thank you. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Next up is the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story that covers local calls for the Cobourg mayor's resignation after their controversial remarks about a homeless shelter.
Protesters and counter-protesters clashed Wednesday at Victoria Hall in Cobourg over Mayor Lucas Cleveland's recent public statement regarding open-air drug use and homelessness within the town. In late June, Cleveland issued his letter calling the emergency homeless shelter at 310 Division Street a failure in public policy, and that the general public are no longer going to accept the criminality, chaos, and unaccountability. This letter was issued following a four-hour town hall meeting a week prior regarding the homeless shelter, where speakers expressed support, opposition, and sympathy for the situation. Since that letter, Cleveland's supporters are backing his tougher stance, while his detractors are calling for him to resign. Community activist Teresa Rickerby said that Cleveland needs to be held accountable for his language and treatment of the public, calling for Cleveland to step down.
So the accountability that I'm looking for is accountability in the communication that he's doing, accountability with the way he speaks to council members. Don't know if you guys watch council meetings. Please watch them and see how uncomfortable they are. Accountability for the discomfort that he's caused so many folks in his office.
As approximately 12 protesters were preparing for their demonstration, a man who refused to identify himself began shouting in support of Cleveland, saying the mayor was the only person standing up for the public and what he called the left-wing agenda.
Him against, I've watched the meetings, I watch everyone in the council go against him. He's the only one that stands up for the people in this town. He's the only one worth on a council that's worth anything. The rest of them should all be gone.
Cleveland did not appear in front of the protesters at the town hall at a special council meeting on July 3rd. Cleveland refused to participate in that meeting as fellow councillors were set to debate Cleveland's June statement. He pronounced that he would not be resigning and he could not be forced to step down. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, July 24th, a 26-degree day. It's going to be cloudy and humid. Moving now towards the weekend. Friday, July 25th, daytime high of 27 degrees, but a high humidity factor. It's going to be a hot, sticky day here in the city of Kingston. Saturday, July 26th, mostly cloudy, but a little less humid. Still going to be a brilliant, sunny day. Perfect barbecue weather, if I do say so myself. Sunday, July 26th. 7th, daytime high of 27 degrees, feeling closer to 29, so humidity at a low, little bit of cloud coverage into the afternoon. And then into the start of next week, Monday, July 28th, it's going to be 26 degrees, partly sunny, with the possibility of an afternoon shower. This is the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week. Public Services and Procurement Canada wishes to advise the public that the LaSalle Causeway will be fully closed to vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians on the following dates: July 20th, July 27th, August 3rd, 10th, 17th, 24th, and 31st, and September 7th from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. In the fall, the causeway will be fully closed September 21st, October 5th, 14th, 19th, November 2nd, and 16th from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Here are the road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 to Middle is closed until August 15th for the removal and replacement of a culvert. Albert Street, Princess and Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Baggett Street, Berry to West is closed until July 23rd at 7 p.m. to accommodate pedestrian and participant safety for the Canadian Little League Championship. Brock Street, Division to Palace is closed until July 31st from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day for road resurfacing. Carlton Street, Alfred de Guy is closed until August 8th for a gas main installation. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria, Princess to North Bartlett is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Wise Street, Woodbine to Megan is closed until July 31st to accommodate construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Accommodation Road, 6th concession to White Church, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Abbeydon Road, Middle to Highway 2, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catterockway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Collins Bay Road, Woodbine to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes landscaping work on Collins Bay Road. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic is down to one lane in each direction. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Garrett Road, 6th concession to Sand Hill, expect delays while a contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Highway 2 to Abbeydon and St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle. Expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road. And White Church Road, 6th concession to Woodburn, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
KPP Concerts has a stacked lineup of all-ages concerts happening at the Broom Factory through this summer into early fall. On June 27th, check out Housewife, followed by Friday's Child at the Broom Factory on July 11th. Then on August 10th, enjoy music from hip-hop artist Matt Mack, followed later by The Dirty Nil on September 19th. Then on September 26th, it's Petite Belle Yvonne and neo-grunge icons The Bridge City Sinners coming to town on September 27th. And then Yukon Blonde gets us into the fall spirit on September 28th. All shows are all ages at the Broom Factory and co-presented by CFRC 101.9 FM. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com. Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Sunny La.
Kwe.
Why eat beef snack seal?
Tan She.
Tanet E. Negar Dakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Why is Quist Sumachat Gentil St. Pinkton? I'm Tracy Kimbono, and I'm coming to you from the beautiful Penticton Indian Reserve in British Columbia. I'm a storyteller, filmmaker, and Stumtima grandmother. Some of my earliest memories involve sitting at the long table in my grandparents' home, where I listened to family converse in Insilchin. Reflecting on those moments, I realize how valuable it would have been to have a recorder to capture the essence of their conversations, which filled my grandmother's kitchen day and night. When I had this opportunity to conduct an interview with my oldest living Sisi, uncle, on my mother's side, I was filled with love and enthusiasm to hear his insights and experiences. I asked him to introduce himself.
My English name is Richard Armstrong. I was born and raised in Penticton. I'm a Shiilch and I'm a Penticton Indian band member. My Shiilch, my real name is Chailch, and I grew up on the land and in the mountains and with the teachings of my elders, like my uncles and my grandmothers and my dad. And I grew up in the mountains pretty much on horseback. We had lots of horses, and my dad used to take me out all the time. Sometimes we'd be out in the mountains 2-3 days, sometimes a week, you know. So I got to know the land quite well, and I'm 79 now, and I'm going to be 80 not too long from now, and I don't do as much walking anymore now. I have nieces and nephews, and I send them out and to the places that I used to have to walk and talk a lot about. So I'm slowing down in my time, but I still am in demand by the Okanagan Nation Alliance, by the Nalkin Center, the Colville, and all the other bands that depend on my knowledge of the land. I am very connected to the land, and I do a lot of work with the water and with the salmon. I'm specifically trained to do the salmon ceremonies. I've been doing that since I was a teenager. I'm training couple of my nieces and nephews to do that, because I'm getting old and I won't be able to do it. That responsibility is there. It's a responsibility to the land.
As an elder, my Sisi Uncle Richard has many apprentices in our family. Within the Sioux Nation, he is also a language teacher, and he shares how the land informs both the language and culture.
When you think about the salmon, you have to keep in mind the water and the places where they come from. And if we're talking about salmon and the water and the spawning areas, we have to think about how contaminated a lot of the places are because of industry and growth of the public encroachment on major tributaries throughout our territory. And that is becoming more of a concern, and right now my main concern is that I'm looking at the amount of snowpacks. Used to be we had no problem with spring runoff and lots of water renewal, but now there isn't much spring runoff because we don't get as much snowpack in the mountains, which impacts all of the tributaries that connect to the creeks, streams, and that end up in the river and where the salmon come from. And I think it's really important that be understood. When I was younger, I remember a time that Chinook salmon used to come up the creek, up Shingle Creek and Skalado Sheep area, and where I was raised, and we used to have the Chinook salmon that are, you know, almost 4 feet long, and that used to happen, and we used to have more water. But now the creeks in June almost dries up, and that is a big worry, and it's only going to get worse. And to me, you know, I noticed the creeks, when I used to play in the creeks, there used to be things like the chaiha, the crayfish. You're really lucky nowadays to even find one in the creek. My nieces and nephews can understand and speak in Shiilchin, but there's a lot of plants, birds, and animals they don't know the names of, and those are the things that I'm trying to work with to bring out, because you have to know the medicine plants, the trees, the grasses, and the water, and all of the creatures that live in there. And to me, that's my job. I think that I'm always trying to make people understand that our connection to the land depends on knowing the language.
You're a fluent speaker. You were born fluent.
Yeah.
And you have been teaching the language and doing everything you can to make sure people are learning the language.
Yeah.
So tell me about when you started to speak English, like you, and then how you got into teaching language.
Yeah, well, when I went to school, I never spoke English at all. I had to learn English in the day school. My first language is in Shiilchin, and I speak my language better than I do the English language. I'm connected with all of the seven bands of the Okanagan Nation, including Douglas Lake. Their teachers always in contact with me, asking me questions and confirming some of the things they're teaching in their schools and in their classrooms, because they depend on my knowledge of the plants, birds, fish, and animals on the land. And I know the names of everything on the land in my language. And to me, that's important.
One of the things I know about you is that you're a gentle teacher. Like, you talked about pronunciation, and you talk about, like, encouraging new learners. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you like to encourage them to stay mm-hmm. in the language.
The thing about language, the students are always afraid to use the language because they're not able to pronounce it properly sometimes. I want to get the student past that fear of saying it wrong. I want to hear how you say it, how you pronounce it, and how you think that you're saying it right. And that's what I work with, because that can be changed. And a lot of times I say, don't be afraid to say how you understand to say it. The way I do it, I always tell them right off the bat, to me, there is no way that you'll be scolded for saying it the way you pronounce it. To me, that's no matter how you pronounce it, you know, we can work with that, because we as proper teachers have to look at dialect differences, because the Colville dialect, Smilkamine dialect, Penticton dialect, Vernon and Douglas Lake dialect, we all speak in Sealichton, but there is a dialect difference. Mm. And Colville might pronounce it a little different, and Smilkameen might pronounce it a little different, the same word, especially things, common things like shoes or clothes or items like that, that the pronunciation is a little different. Yeah. And that's not a person's job to try and find one pronunciation. I always tell the Sealichton teachers to learn them all and accept all of them, and not to pick one that says this is the right way to say it, because all of them are correct from the area you come from.
So I'm going to ask you, as we get closer to the end, so if we're here at Anaukin, what is the name of Okanagan Lake? I should know that.
Okanagan Lake is Klooskenitko.
Klooskenit.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Skaha? Stuchin.
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 That's the real old name for Skaha.
Okay.
You know where the word Skaha came from?
No.
A long time ago, Skaha Lake used to be called Dog Lake.
Okay.
You could see that on the maps. It's still written there, Dog Lake.
Yeah.
And then the people said, well, that's not nice to call it Dog Lake. What's the name of the dog? Well, dog is an animal. What's an animal? Skaha. And the name Skaha came from the word Skaha, meaning a four-legged creature belonging to the, four-leggeds, the dog and the horse and whatever. Skaha is
Skaha.
Yeah, that's where the word Skaha came from.
So that's the English kind of
word. Yeah.
But the old name that you said.
The old name for Skaha Lake is Tuchin.
Tuchin.
Yeah.
And what's the name of, so there's a little mountain right here.
Hearing and learning the original names for familiar places in my community on the reserve and nation is so fascinating. For many people in this country, it's been lost that all lands we walk on have indigenous place names, and that's especially true for right here in the Okanagan. Even the name Okanagan, Sukunaken, S, those uk who carry or take to Nakain, to tops of mountains, It's the name of my people here in this valley, here in the Okanagan. I was curious to know more of the old names, so I spoke with Sissy while sitting here at Inaukun Center on the Penticton Indian Reserve, and so I asked him to share where we were.
There's so many different little spots that each area has a specific name, like just across the creek, it's called Kilnasa.
Kilnasa.
Yeah, Kilnasa.
Kilnasa.
And a little further up, there's Teraktiltiltisp.
Teraktiltiltisp.
Yeah, and then the Elderberry Flat, you know, that long stretch.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the elderberries that used to grow along there.
Yeah.
That's the name of that straight stretch between the rock bluff turns in here. But all of the places, like Chichikot and Kilnasa, there's all the little, there's a major area that the delta, like from way up there where it comes like this, that whole area has a name, but in that area there's lots of little spots that have special names.
But where we grew up is Kalusip.
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 Yeah, do you know what that word means?
I think it's where the creeks join.
It's the confluence.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's the confluence of Shingle Creek and Sheep Creek and Shatford Creek. You know. It's the confluence, Kalusip.
Kalusip.
And it comes from the word ulus, where it just comes together.
Skalusip. Okay.
While my Sissy Uncle Richard is almost 80, he embraces technology because he says it is the way to reach and teach our people.
That's exactly true, and it's always in my mind of how we can reach people, and we have to use technology to the highest level now. I'm learning that technology is a way to bring people together through Zoom. I can have as many as 15, 20 students on Zoom, and we can all talk to each other without having the person come all the way from Douglas Lake or Verdon or Smilkameen or Colville, and we can all be on the computer on Zoom, and we can talk and see Ilkchen and the student, and I have a regular class that's online students, and to me that's understanding that we need to use technology to bring our old ways to the students that depend on. When you look at our nieces and nephews and students, everybody's carrying a cell phone.
Yeah.
And they're on it all the time. When you look at somebody, they're walking around and they're talking to their cell phone, you know. I've seen some of my nieces and nephews sitting around the table. Nobody was talking. Everybody was sitting there talking on their cell phones, you know, texting. And I was looking at that, and I kind of got a kick out of that, you know. And that was kind of the things that goes through a teacher's mind. We can't get rid of that. It's what it is today. We as teachers of the old way have to understand how we can use that technology. Whether it's Zoom, whether it's online, whether it's voice files, whether it's email, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah, because I know I've texted you or messaged you and asked you, how do you say this word? And you've sent me an audio clip or you've sent me a text.
Yeah, or both.
Yeah.
And how it's written and sealed and the audio clip. And that's like, that's what we have to do now. Somebody from Vernon was stuck on a word, text me, how do you say this? Oh, okay, you say it like this, you send a voice file. I've learned how to use voice files, I've learned how to write in the English alphabet, you know, and I can type it on my computer and send a voice file along with the written transcription of what I just said. But now what I'm doing, as I teach online class, and I tell my students, here's a verse of what I just said, and I talk about something, and I tell them, record this. You guys have my TA, my teacher's assistant, has the ability to record what I said. And then I tell the students, okay, you are a student of Inshilichtin, I'm teaching you. I'm going to say this in Inshilichtin. I want you to listen to it and tell me what I said. I'm not looking for word-for-word transcription. I'm looking for what it is you think I said. Because when I'm talking to you, I got to know how you understand what I'm saying. And that gives me an idea. So that's how I work with my online students, by telling them, you know, something like that. And I tell them, okay, that's a voice file. Now you what did I say?
You talked about walking to a creek.
Yeah.
And then I didn't get anything after that.
Yeah, you know, that's what I do to my student. Just what you did. Here's what I understood of what you said. That's what I want to hear, what you understood, because I can work with that, because knowing what you understood tells me what you're missing.
Okay, so what did I miss in that?
So what you're missing at is, you're not missing much. It's you're missing the words that you haven't heard, the pronunciation of in Inshilichtin, and there's nothing wrong with that. How are you going to know? Because you've never heard that.
That's right.
Being used, and I always tell my students, don't worry about that. It's just because you haven't heard it. You know, it's not because you don't know. It just hasn't been used in conversation with you.
Yeah.
So they're at ease, you know. Teachers have to learn how to put their students at ease, and they're not afraid to say something. Most students are so afraid to make a mistake.
Yeah. So one last before we sign off. I've heard you say, I'm going to teach as many people as I can, because it's no good when I'm not here to take it with me when I'm gone.
That's really important. There's an important thing to mention, because all of the knowledge that I have is not good for anybody or anything if I take it with me when I die. It hasn't done anybody any good or not. And, you know, I'm damn near 80 years old now, and to me, I want to get as much of that out there as possible. And I encourage my students to ask any question they want about plants, birds, animals, people, to me, everything else that they can think of, because we can talk about anything, you know. And if you want to talk about the English language and what the difference is in Inshilichtin language, there's a big difference of the language. It's not like English, you know. The Inshilichtin is like watching a movie. You can see it. In English, that doesn't happen. And to me, some of the students that start to understand that, I got a kick out of it when I realized that that student is understanding that it's not just a spoken word, that Nshiilchin has a mental picture tied to it. In English, that doesn't happen. It's just a word.
Yeah.
You know. But in Shiilchin, there is the suffix, the prefix, you know, and how a word is said. Even just listening to a sound, you listen to the suffix that says itk.
Itk.
No matter what's in front of it, you know that itk is about water.
Water.
Yeah. And if you hear the ending, the suffix of a word that says ilp.
Ilp.
You know you're talking about plants. Or trees or whatever. Yeah.
Like skukuilp.
Yeah. Or see ilp or skukuilp or any kind of ilp. That's a plant. And that's what I try to get the students' ears to hear that sound, because it's not the word, it's the sound.
Yeah.
Because if you take the word itk,
itk,
that means, oh, it's about water. But what about water? It could be hot water, cold water, fast water, slow water, and yeah. All of the other things. But as soon as it says itk, you know it's about water.
Yeah.
If it says ilp, you know it's about plants or grasses or that kind of
yeah.
thing.
Well, I think we've done good.
I'm glad to be able to answer some of those questions for you, and I really look forward to, you know, the interest of the Nauken Center and other organizations that are teaching the language. I want to help.
It has been an absolute honor to sit and talk with my sissy Uncle Richard. I could have listened to him describe our territory all day. Well, this is the last episode of the Silk Episodes for Words and Culture, and I cannot tell you how grateful I am to have spent time with the Sukhmamayam language teachers and keepers. I want to thank all the guests who shared their knowledge with us. Throughout this series, my journey has been transformative, filled with enlightening moments and valuable insights. One of my most precious moments was interviewing my daughter and granddaughter, Cece Match and Kukulwimpt. We both realized how close we are to reviving our language and how easily it could fade if we don't dedicate time to learning it. This series has helped me appreciate those committed to improving fluency in our endangered Nshiilchin language. Each conversation has inspired me to think more critically about how we can work together, one word at a time. Lim Lim to all of you for being an important part of this experience. Coming up in June, we're taking a trip to the East Coast, where your host Pam Palmateer will introduce you to the Mi'kmaq and Wulastaque languages. If you want to check out more episodes of Words and Culture, head to our website, wordsandculture.ca, or listen to wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Isquist sumachat, till next time, White Ninawis achacha mi ku kwakwelt.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Audio recording by Craig Carpenter. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Hausin Dang King Sam.
Maltus.
Ninuis Achacha Miku Kwakwal.
Kachunautano.
Wapamatin Mina.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queen's football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gaels!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queen's football coverage.
Looking for Nico Quaymo! Quaymo, my goodness!
follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
The we is how we see the world, which is that everybody is made up of lots and lots of different personalities, fantasies, attitudes, and that a multi-personality is in fact the reality, not the I personality, and that where those two things meet is the position that we're trying to work at, to break people across from seeing themselves as one-dimensional and having no potential, to seeing themselves as being almost anything they want to be, and that those different things don't have to always agree in the usual accepted way.
No Static, every Monday from 6 to 8 on CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. You never know what you're gonna get.
Oh, hey, Boomer, radio guy. You're looking pretty good. Long time no see.
Stack them eights, yo-yo. Feel free to let your tongue down and hammer away with words that make you feel good.
Okay, well, I'm not really sure what that means, but now that I've seen you, I wanted to tell you, I got my own radio show. It's on Saturday mornings from 8 until 10. It's called Making Bacon.
Hey, Beaver, the place to get help is on Channel 9, and I'll do a 10-5 about that motion lotion all over this here slab.
I don't know what that means, but I don't think you should be saying stuff like that.
Keep the shiny side up and the dirty side down.
Okay, whoa. Okay, look. It's just Saturday mornings from 8 until 10. Check it out. Making Bacon. CFRC 101.9.
Idle talk is a nuisance. Get out there and do it to it. Love and kisses.